Leslie, aka Bestie. Ever had sexy, ever got licked, but he never got swallowed. Bitch, you know that nigga ain't a sugar pop lotto. He was on a Twitter, but he never got followed. I'm matching up with them when I get that.
How did your showings go?
This morning was great. He liked them all so much, he couldn't even decide, but he's deciding. And then the second one was awkward because the girl mentioned that she had a dog, and I'm pretty sure dogs aren't allowed. And I asked her if she had pets, and she didn't mention it. And then the third one, he liked it a lot, and he told me I looked really cool, so that was good.
Nice, okay. Has the market been like people are quick to close recently? Or?
No, people are always slow and think too hard, and then shit gets taken, and they're like, fuck. Because everyone's, like, trying to find the perfect place. And it's, like, just find somewhere you like and that makes you happy and go with it. I don't know. I mean, like, you can get to that, like, level when you're, like, you know, when your budget is, like, fucking $3,000 for yourself. But from when I started, you could get a one-bedroom in Lakeview that was, like, you know, decent for, like, $1,500. And now it's, like, like, if you want a decent one bedroom now in Lakeview, it's probably going to be like $1,900, $2,000 or more. Like, there's places that I have been leasing for like years. And, like, for example, like when I started this one building, their one bedrooms were $1,595. Now they're $2,295. And this is just like a walk up in Lakeview.
I've never paid four figures like for rent. I've always been around like 700 ish average.
Well, consider yourself lucky.
I'm savvy.
Yeah, you're really frugal.
That too. Yeah, I'm willing to cut a lot of corners. Welcome back, Jack. It's been a minute.
Oh, it's good to be back.
I got to see you.
Yeah, even though you were just here, we had a lot of fun.
I know, everyone rolled the red carpet out for me when I came back, and I'm like, this is great. I'm definitely gonna visit again, and have I'm in no rush to like move back for real, because, you know, I like being the celebrity visitor and not the...
Oh yeah, the it girls in town.
Yeah, yeah, it's much cooler than being like the resident unemployed friend.
We had fun.
For sure. I'm like in St. Louis, dog sitting right now, so that's also kind of fun, but in a different way. I mainly just get to sit on my sister's couch and do research on whatever.
Conspiracy theories.
Yeah, just going from Reddit threads to Wikipedia articles and all over the place, Twitter, X, whatever.
My I don't know how to switch it. I even like googled how to do it and it didn't work, but I mean, I haven't tried hard enough, but somehow my like browser, my default browser, got set to like Bing, and people have said to me before that like Bing is like supposedly the best, and it is so not true.
That's the dorkiest thing I've ever heard. That's like when people say that Android is better, which
like yeah, exactly. I'm like, I think Bing is like Microsoft.
Yeah, I think you're right. But yeah, I mean, let's see what's going on. I'm trying to figure out. My timeline's been covered with this shit about like Diddy, and then also about like Kate Middleton and like a bunch of other stuff that I have not. Well, I feel like I know more about the Diddy thing than I do about Kate Middleton. I'm like, not much of a royalist.
Same. Like Diddy sounds like he's like a gay predator, or
yeah, he's like the average person that goes to hydrate, like basically just willing to coerce people into sex and put things in their drinks and yeah, have weird after parties. That honestly, yeah, I mean, the coercion part is getting a bit swept under the rug because people are focused on the gay part. Because I mean, if it was just a gay sex party with a bunch of rappers, you know, that would be one thing.
That would be hot. That would be so hot.
Right. But there's like court documents involved, so it's a whole nother situation that,
like, what?
Well, somebody's suing him. I mean, it's, I mean, who's to say if he, I mean, obviously when you're rich, you get sued. So, like, if, you know, some bald daddy in Boys Town had a sex party and was coercing people into
bald specifically,
whatever, it can be any kind of weird sex freak in having a party. There's no point in suing him. What are you going to get out of it? But Diddy has a lot you can go after. And I mean, he's in a different position.
What, these people are like, oh no, I got taken to a gay sex party.
Yeah, basically.
I'm victim blaming right now. Sorry.
Well, I mean, we don't know if he's a victim or not. He's an alleged victim.
I saw some stuff about like Usher and Diddy.
Yeah, in order to make his case stronger, he added a lot of other celebrities, including Usher, Meek Mill, Fabulous, Stevie something.
Saying what?
He was just saying like that Diddy would show him a video of him and Meek Mill or him and Usher doing some shit to make him feel more comfortable about fucking or whatever. So he's arguing that,
like, here's me fucking a dude. So
yeah, not just a dude, but here's me fucking like a dude that's big in the industry. So basically, like, you don't have to feel nervous about letting me fondle you.
This is so like Harvey Weinstein-y.
Yeah, it was making me think of,
I mean, okay, no, it's actually not like that at all, but
it's more like Tiger King.
Let's talk about Tiger King. Wait, his quote was, "A tiger and a little bit of meth, I can make MGK gay."
Bold of him to assume that MGK is not already on meth.
A tiger and a little bit of meth. That's like, yeah, you could coerce me into anything. Meth is my favorite drug. Just kidding.
Well, Tiger King's in, or Joe Exotic, as whatever he goes by, he's in jail for animal abuse, I think. So I guess he's been able to,
yeah,
get on Instagram from there. And
what the fuck? How come like Jen Shah hasn't been on Instagram?
Honestly, she probably has. Do you follow her?
Oh, she's in jail.
I think she has been on Instagram though. I don't think I've personally seen it, but I've heard that she has, and I think that that's becoming like more common, like that people in jail like have access to phones and it's not that hard.
Like selfies from your cell.
Yeah, OnlyFans from behind the bars.
Yeah, you can purchase more at like the jail commissary or whatever. Yeah, they sell like makeup at jail.
Yeah, I'm sure Jen is on top of that.
Yeah, she's getting like Revlon mascara and Maybelline eyeshadow. I don't know what kind of make, Wet n Wild. Or maybe they're at like a jail that sells like, you know, Laura Mercier, MAC.
She is at one of the nice ones. That's
La Mer.
That's why Lizzie Holmes is in there with her, because it's like the chillest one. It's like, I think in Texas.
Yeah, they're besties.
It's so cool.
Yeah, all the rich people go to like nice jail. So if I went to jail, I don't know where they'd put me.
Probably depends on your lawyer. Like what he's able to argue for you, he or she.
Yeah, like this bitch will die in jail. That's what my lawyer should say. I would though. I'd get fucking beat or whatever.
I've thought about how I would do in jail. I mean, hopefully I don't have to find out, but I feel like I'd be all right.
I'm surprised I've never been yet, but.
Well, I've never been to prison. I guess you have to make that distinction. Jail versus prison.
I've never been to either. Goody two shoes over here, but I do have a misdemeanor.
I've been to jail twice, I think, just like holding cells or whatever for like high school stupid shit.
Nice.
There's this area behind my parents' house that I always walked on and would, you know, just go on hikes with my dog whenever I got home from school. And then eventually would go back there with friends to like, you know, smoke or drink or whatever. And didn't realize it was a National Park because it's connected to this historical Native American, like the Natchez Trace is like the pathway, but now it's a road anyway. So whenever that MIP situation happened, I got a letter in the mail. It was like the United States of America versus Christopher Butts.
Damn. Yeah, never been to jail. I got taken to the hospital once in college because of alcohol poisoning, but they didn't even pump my stomach, so whatever.
When I was in jail the other time, which when I had to spend the night, and that's a whole nother story about, like, God, it was, I was in a car basically next to a bar that I had left because I was having social anxiety. This other guy was hitting on me and I was very much like in the closet, if you will. Not that I, like, I don't know. I hate that phrasing because I, whatever. I just wasn't in a headspace.
Well, I used to be like passively, like at a certain point in high school, I like stopped pretending to have crushes on girls and just like didn't talk about it.
That makes sense. I don't know. I had girlfriends until like freshman year of college. And that's when I got...
Oh my God, you were a player.
Ooh, yeah. I was going to formals. I have t-shirts to prove it. I was in there.
I always had dates to the dances and stuff, but like, you know, never had like a girlfriend, no. I like made out with some girls, but like who didn't? I'd make out with girls now.
T. I really missed out on getting one of them pregnant, so I wouldn't have to...
Are you in the... What's the club they call it where you've never had sex with a girl?
Like Gold Star or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Okay, Gold Star. Yeah.
I guess it depends on how you define it.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure I'm not a part of that club, but it really does get down to semantics.
I'm not. Just kidding. I've never had sex with a girl. I'm a too much of a bottom to do that.
Fair.
Sorry, ladies.
Are you still a Gold Star if a girl pegs you?
Like, I don't know. I just wouldn't want, no. Again, sorry, ladies.
But anyway, I shouldn't even get into the second arrest. It was, I will, like, briefly. I basically, a cop on a horse in my college town. Went trot, 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 like down the square in this middle of the city, because the square was where we went out. It was a city square, like you would imagine in like a cute small town America. And the cops would be on horses, and he saw me. I had left the bar to lay down and kind of decompress, and I turned the radio on, but I wasn't driving, I wasn't going to drive, but he looked at it like I was, I don't know what he was looking at. He was just like, this kid's in this car and looks like he's fucked up. And I think my car was like a mess, like it was filled with clothes because I wasn't sleeping in my dorm every night.
It's like, who's this hobo?
Yeah, basically that's what he thought.
Boho.
He knocked on the door and I was like not really sure what was happening at first. I wasn't asleep, but I was definitely not aware of my surroundings in a like eyes closed, like focus on my breathing kind of mood.
Yeah, you're like nodding off.
Yeah, I was counting sheep or whatever. I don't know. One thing led to another. He was like slamming me against the car.
Oh my God.
And anyway, when I went to jail that time, I just like hid under a blanket, which was like pretty effective.
Don't talk to me.
I
don't think that would work in Cook County Jail. Like Cook County Jail sounds, I think it's on like those shows of like, you know, Lock Up Raw or whatever, you know?
Do you think that you're allowed to like have blankets and like hide under them? That's what I would hope.
In your cell.
Oh, right. But you can't stay in your cell all day. or can you?
Yeah, because they have to like release you to go out and like play in the yard. I don't know how the fuck it works. But all I know is that like people fight all the time in jail, and I would not be able to defend myself against probably anybody. So
have you seen that Instagram account that's like Idaho inmates that are looking for pen pals? All of these men in Idaho prison, like uploading videos, and it's gotten a lot of attention. I
kind of want one now.
No, I know. I want to write one. I think you would like a lot of what Idaho prisons have to offer. It's been a pretty popular account for for that reason.
Oh my god, I find my dream man at the Idaho prison via pen pal.
But yeah, if you want to check out this Instagram, it's Idaho Inmate Pen Pal.
Okay, cool. I'll write one tonight.
Yeah, let me know how it goes.
I'm like not kidding.
I can't bring myself to.
Why?
I don't think I'm what they're looking for in a pen pal. So
I mean, yeah, but even, I don't know. I'm just curious to get like one response and see what it says. And then maybe I'll write back. Who knows? Or maybe I just won't.
It'll be some guy that like murdered his girlfriend asking you if you can please send him a review of the new Charlie XCX single because he can't hear it until he gets out.
I would. I love it. I don't care. I love it.
Von Dutch.
Yeah. It dropped today. I was so excited. I love the music video. I'm a Charlie XCX stan, so what the fuck ever.
Number one fan.
Yeah, no, in Spotify, I was like 0.001%, which is like honestly embarrassing and psychotic, but I don't care. I don't care. I love it. I love the new song. She did tease it for too long. I will agree. A lot of people on Twitter were saying that.
What?
But
did she? I didn't know she teased it at all. I had not heard about it until today. She's
been doing it for like 6 weeks.
All I saw was the Brat album announcement, which was like a couple days ago.
Yeah, she did like the Boiler Room announcement, but that was like different.
So she's been teasing Von Dutch?
Yeah. No, she kept teasing Von Dutch.
Oh, okay. I'm not plugged in to...
Well, okay. Yeah, she kept doing that on TikTok and Instagram specifically with Von Dutch. But like the snippets of like other songs I've heard sound really cool. And yeah, I'm excited for the album. And also the Boiler Room, I would have died if I was there. It looks so fun.
Oh, I saw a couple clips. It looked really cool. I mean, it would have been fun.
Julia Fox performing though, I was like, what?
I would have been excited. I would not be starstruck for Addison Rae, but I would be for Julia Fox.
Yeah, no, but Julia Fox, like, she went up and got, like, she was performing with a mic and everything, and you just, like, couldn't hear anything. Because it was just, like, yeah. I saw someone, like, taking a clip, like, from outside of the Boiler Room when she played Vroom Vroom, and it was like all the lights and stuff. I don't know. I want to go there, but yeah, I got accepted by her like secret Instagram, because okay, she has her like Instagram, but then she has this other Instagram and it only has like 100,000 followers, and yeah, she just posts other shit on there. But it's like private. So yeah, I'm on the in.
I don't even know if I follow her regular account. I am a fan though. I just, I probably do, but I'm not sure. I have to unfollow my artists.
That was the concert where you got hate crimed or after.
Yes, that was that one. I mean, that was the second time I've seen Charlie XCX. The first time was at Pitchfork and I was, in the video, like the YouTube video.
Yes.
I mean, you can barely see me, but I know where I am.
Okay, so that thing you posted on your story of me and the Ty Segall thing in Spin. I was all over like the Pitchfork website because I was like in the front row of shit. Yeah. Like fucking 10 years ago. Oh my God. I feel like an old bitch.
Pitchfork has fallen off so bad. I think I went to Pitchfork for the first time 10 years ago also.
I think the first time I technically went was 2017. I was in high school. And then...
Wasn't that Spin issue from 2012? Or was that a different festival?
Oh, no, no, no. Okay, I was like mixing up college and high school. Yeah, no, the first time I went was in 2012, I think. No, 2011, because I went the year before that issue. So, who gives a fuck?
It's just like a bummer that their lineups have been so much...
lame as fuck?
Yeah, I've really tried to defend them for a lot longer than I should have, because it...
Yeah, why?
Because it's such a better festival than other festivals in terms of...
No, the festival is good, but Pitchfork sucks.
Yeah, I mean, the reasons the festival is so good is because you can seriously see the entire lineup.
There's only three stages.
So even if you only know like half of it, which is like a very, like, it's kind of impossible to even know half of that lineup. Now, like, if I know five artists out of the, like, I don't know, 36 artists or something, then I feel like it's a good year. But I don't know, even still, it's cool because it's affordable and you can just see the entire lineup without having to run from like one side of the festival to the other.
But it's still like big, you know, whatever. I saw Grimes there with my friend way back. This was probably 2012, and she like passed out in the middle of the concert.
I saw Grimes there too. It may have been a different year, but that was, yeah, my first time at Pitchfork. It was like Grimes and Kendrick Lamar were on the same day.
First time I had an edible was at the Grimes concert my freshman year in Minneapolis, because I couldn't eat edibles in high school because I got drug tested.
Oh, yeah. Did you go to college in Minneapolis?
Yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah, loved it. Love Minneapolis, just not meant to live there.
I need to go again.
I need to go again because I haven't been since, like, George Floyd. So, yeah. Because where I used to live was where all that shit burnt down. So I used to live in this neighborhood called Longfellow, and like my house, because we could fucking rent an entire house with a yard for $1,500. This was in 2017. And my like back alley backed up to like the, there's this area off of Lake Street, which is like the main, it's the busiest street slash highest like crime street in Minneapolis. Anyways, though, that's where, like, a lot of, like, anarchy went on. And they burnt down... It was really sad. They burnt down this mini Haha Liquors. And it had been there forever and had, like, this really cool sign and stuff. There's, like, all these photos of it burning to the ground. And it's sad. Yeah. I like, used to go there. And it was, like, literally out my back alley. So it's wild to think, like, you know...
It won't be the same city that you remember.
Or just, like, imagine if I had been there. Like, that was happening in my backyard.
Oh, I didn't even, yeah. I don't think I've ever, well, I mean, there were riots in Chicago, of course, as well. I felt like my neighborhood was not affected because there was, like, the Latin Kings were kind of posted up to protect the Pilsen community businesses, like the Mexican-owned.
The Latin Kings are cool, kind of.
I mean, I thought that was kind of cool. It reminded me of, like, when, was it the Koreans in LA were defending their businesses after, I don't remember, was it, like, Rodney riots in South Central?
I don't know, but I believe it. Lakeview was not that affected. I just remember that day when they first started, me and my roommate, like, went downtown just to kind of, like, whatever, observe. And we were standing on Michigan Avenue, like by the Ralph Lauren store, which is across from Neiman Marcus. And this group of people, like, because Neiman's has those like display windows, you know, where they put like the tall, skinny mannequins. Like, I saw this group of people, they smashed it, and then like, at least a dozen people ran in, and then they're all like 30 seconds later running out with like Chanel and Balenciaga bags and like all this crazy shit. I was like, kind of like, damn, I should have got in on that. Cause they all got away.
No, I remember. I wasn't there, but
I don't know. It was just crazy. I might have like a video of it on my phone, I think. I don't know.
I spent the entire pandemic, yeah, just like walking around Pilsen and going to like, they had all these cute community gardens and just cool little parks here and there.
Yeah, you lived in Pilsen.
Yeah, the riots didn't really go there, like I was saying, because we had our own sort of, I shouldn't like name myself as a part of the community that the Latin Kings were serving, but I mean, I still benefited from it indirectly.
Yeah, and people there, I think, look out for each other.
Yeah, that's fair. I agree. It was cool.
Yeah, that's cool to have like a gang that like is protective and not just, they're more concerned about their homies.
I'm still thinking about Machine Gun Kelly, mainly because of his tattoos.
Mainly because what?
His tattoos. That was what the Instagram post was, is he got like ink that like blacked out his pecs and shoulders.
Oh.
Like his tattoo covers like entire portions of his flesh. And that's what Joe Exotic was commenting on. That's what was getting him hot. He's into it? Mm-hmm.
He's jerking it in prison. He's hot. You know, I got things for tall guys.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, I don't know. I'm not going to disagree, or because he, like, I get it, but I also,
I can see why you like don't think he's hot.
It's not just like, oh, because everybody else does. It's because I'm competing with him for the people that think he's hot in my head.
Okay, yeah.
So if a guy has a crush on me, there's also a strong chance. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not so similar. I'm just like tall, pale, and skinny.
Yeah, but he's like 6'5".
I wouldn't want a boyfriend that tall.
I've had a boyfriend that tall.
They like die early and shit.
Well, I mean, it depends. Like, but no, when you're tall, your heart has to work harder to pump the blood.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. That's what it is. So your heart, it gets like tired.
Yeah, my heart's a little upbeat. It ain't in tune.
So speaking of hearts and organs, I have found myself very deeply interested in the market for organ trafficking. I'll explain to you like how I got to this place of obsession, and then we can really get into what I've learned. But it was while I was in Chicago, somebody, I won't say who, but I was at dinner and somebody was kind of like warning me not to just go on free trips that are offered that I don't fully understand the details of.
Which you might have done for.
I've definitely fallen in some traps that way. I find myself to be more impressionable than.
You weren't organ trafficked.
Yeah, I was not organ trafficked. I think that the victims of organ trafficking are by design people that are poor and usually are not US citizens, because your US citizens are, you know, if you're ranking people on how vulnerable they are, US citizens are thought of as people that, you know, if they go missing, people are going to ask questions.
Depends who it is.
But if I'm comparing U.S. citizens to poor people in Brazil.
Migrants.
Or not even migrants, just people that are like poor in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, I don't know that it happens so much in America, but that's what surprised me so much about this story, actually, is that it was somebody that I have a mutual friend with coming back from a trip to Puerto Rico with this bruise on his face, a story about how he won a free trip and woke up and was in a hospital with like meat hooks in his arms, and he looked around.
Meat hooks?
That's what I heard. I don't even know how the logistics of that work, because
that's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, it was a very horrific description. I was very disturbed, but it stuck with me. And he was looking around his surroundings, like behind his curtain, and could see other bodies that had writing on them. And
that were moving?
No. Bodies that were laid out on the wheelies or whatever they have in hospitals, either unconscious or dead, that had writing on their bodies.
Like probably as like where to put the incision?
Yeah, or like what their blood type is, or if there's a person that has already arranged for, like, because their organs aren't just going to go to the people on the waiting list. Like their organs have to go to people that are already involved,
that are throwing down that money.
Yeah, that are throwing down money and can, you know, intentionally participating in a black market and covering their tracks because they can afford to, and because there are people that make it their profession to orchestrate the exchange of organs from poor or vulnerable people that you know, either are coerced or volunteer because they're desperate and need money.
Yeah, I knew or had heard of like organ trafficking, but I don't know, didn't think it was that prevalent or whatever, just didn't look into it. And then I was very shocked because a lot of them are like these doctors or pseudo doctors that, yeah, like barter with these needy people who volunteer to give their kidney or whatever the fuck. Like, I always was under the impression that everyone who was organ trafficked was murdered, but that's like not the case.
Yeah, the person is still alive, and it's confusing because some organs, I think, are more likely to be from, like, I don't actually know. Honestly, don't know. That there's a certain part of it that I feel like I've gotten a good grasp on, but in terms of like how big of a problem is the specific extreme example of somebody being kidnapped and murdered for their organs versus, you know, coerced, yeah, or found because they, well, volunteer.
Okay, so there's that FBI article about the first guy who was like convicted, and he, at least what he claims, was that he made propositions to these donors, quote unquote donors, and they agreed to it, and he would like take their sample to make sure it's okay. He like made it sound like kind of like appealing and like nice, but basically he would screw these people over. He'd make, you know, over six figures and they'd make $5,000. And then I also saw a video where this reporter is following this masked up fake voice organ collector. He like basically literally went up to this homeless guy and was like, hey, you're struggling. I'll give you $5,000 for your kidney. And the guy was like, okay, let me think about it. Yeah. Can we talk about a little bit about the prevalence of Israel?
Sure. Okay. So the article I sent you was, yeah, like archived within the FBI's website. And the journalist was not from the FBI. They were from another publication. I can't remember which one, but the FBI archived that. And it was, like you said, in the United States. Okay, so
it was 2011.
So yeah, the situation was this Israeli American, you know, immigrated from Israel to America and had become a very prominent organ broker, which
organ
is like
broker.
A disturbing term, because I'm used to thinking of like, you know, real estate brokers or like yacht brokers and shit like that, but not like, I don't know, organ brokers.
Yeah, that's obviously like, that is a unofficial term.
But that's what it is. Like, that's what his job was. He matched.
That is what it is. But like, you know, you can't be like an organ broker. Like,
I mean, I wouldn't put it on my LinkedIn, but that is what he does, you know, or did before he got caught.
I should, yeah, like 3 years as an organ broker at
at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Might get some like interesting hits.
I would hope not, but maybe so. The whole situation was the FBI did this big sting and they had enough evidence to get him to plead guilty. And the charges were I don't know if he's saying like a canary. I think he just confessed because
maybe he like sugarcoated it.
He was only being charged for 3 counts and 1 attempted account. Because the attempted was when the undercover agent had set up and orchestrated, you know, the initial parts of an illegal transplant by, you know, getting their blood work done to figure out what their blood type was. And then talking about price. And then the broker, his name's Isaac Rosenbaum. He was in contact with people in Israel that were most likely Palestinian, but it didn't call them that. It just called them like an Israeli donor because that's where his connections were.
I mean, but why would they be Palestinian if they were in Israel?
Well, there's a lot of possibilities, but basically the reason I say that is because historically it's been custom for Jewish people not to be organ donors. That's changed in recent history, but like,
yeah, they do kind of what they want.
So organ transplants began in the 70s, and Israel was one of the countries that had the fewest donors, and it was because it was seen as against their religion to do that. Like, and there's, you know, it's sort of the same vibe as like, you know, it being against our religion to get tattoos or whatever, like body modification or, you know. So there was never many people in Israel like doing organ donations, but they did have people that needed organs. So for the 90s, it was not uncommon for the organs of dead Palestinians to be taken from, you know, the morgue to a hospital in Israel.
Wait, so are we saying that Palestine was giving their organs or Israel was giving dead Palestinian organs?
So in the 90s, it was Palestinians who had not consented to this. So that's different from like, you know, if on your driver's license it'll like say if you're an organ donor and when you die it's okay for your organs to be taken from you.
Well, also like if you're murdered.
Yeah, and honestly I think it was a mix.
Like, organ donor doesn't mean I'm like okay with being murdered. Well it's
a mix between dead bodies that just died for some other reason. Like it could have been a car crash and they go to the morgue. It could have been a bomb attack or something, and they go to the morgue. I don't know what the split is on that. I guess the main point is they, like, their families did not consent to having their bodies, like, broken open for their organs. No, nor did they.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And so that was sort of like the worst of it that I can see has been like confirmed.
I think it's worse to take advantage of an alive person than someone who's already died of sort of natural causes. Yeah. Well, that brings me to like the people who are murdered for the organs. Which,
well, let's, I want to wrap up the story about like Rosenbaum real quick.
Oh yeah, let's talk about his sentencing and shit.
Yeah, I want to stick with Rosenbaum. So sticking with Israel, and I know I keep going all over the place because I'm talking about the 90s and shit, but it is related because you were just asking like why I think the organs are from Palestinians when they're from Israel. It just is the way of this kind of black market. The poor having their organs or donating their organs, because this Rosenbaum case, he wasn't charged of, you know, like taking people's organs against their will. He's charged of brokering consenting donors to recipients in America or in other countries. But in this case, America, it's because the people that donated want money, and that's illegal. It's illegal to pay people for organ donations. So that I guess the intention of that is to prevent this sort of dynamic where poor people like don't get to have the same relationship with their body that rich people do.
Yeah, like Selena Gomez or whatever, her kidney was a donation or something. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
No, what? What?
No, okay, Selena Gomez, her, like, friend gave her her kidney, and now they, like, hate each other, but I'm like, how can you hate someone if they gave you their kidney? If I was Selena Gomez, I would compensate the person regardless, but I understand why, yeah, it's not, like, legal to pay or barter for people's organs.
Yeah, it's something...
It should be people willing to do it out of the kindness of their heart.
Yeah, or otherwise through the organ waiting list. Just, I'm not saying how it should be, it's just what would be legal, because
yeah,
it's not ideal to have to wait, you know, like 3 to 7 years.
Yeah, say you're like a fucking, say you're worth like $20 million. Can you, well, I'm sure you can, but like, it's like, can you just like put yourself in front of the line? Probably.
That's a good question. I don't have any proof that that happens, but it definitely is the kind of thing where even if it's not true, like literally, it's like true directionally. And
yeah, or people pull strings, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe people that are more prioritized based on their occupation, if they are like the president of the United States, for example.
Joe needs a new kidney. Joe needs a new brain.
I wonder if he has had any organ transplants. People like,
I wouldn't put it past him.
There's all sorts of shit other than kidneys that get into the,
you can do it with your liver, except I don't think a living person can give their liver. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's a good point. Most of the organ transplants that happen are from a person that died to a person that's on a waiting list. And
what's another one that you can give if you're alive?
Well, I have no idea, but I know the ones that you can give that when you're dead are cornea. You can give skin.
Cornea?
You can give, yeah, your eye.
That's so weird. Okay.
Yeah. And then... I don't know. I don't think there are any others that you can give while you're alive other than
heart,
your kidney. Yeah, you can give your heart while you're still living. That's the one I forgot.
Oh, well. Whatever.
Okay, so this guy was sentenced after, okay, I happen to know more than what was in the article based on other research I did.
Oh, wow.
So I know that he got his start in the late 90s and made a big name for himself. And
what it's going to be alive.
Right. And was able to successfully broker from consenting donors in other countries or wherever, but a lot of it was across borders. And that's why he also was probably able to charge, you know, these six figures for the service, you know, charging the recipient and only give like, you know, 10 grand to the donor is because the donors were in other countries or were, yeah, in other like kind of situations where they were willing to make that sacrifice for their family to like eat or whatever. So
yeah,
the FBI got informed about this at the latest in 2002, but they did not start really pursuing him until I think 07, and he didn't get sentenced to prison until 2012, and his sentence was 2.5 years.
Well, it was kind of a long sting operation.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it fucking goes. It's like with Jin Shah, like they don't get to just do it until they have their case ready.
Well, they had this like undercover agent.
Oh my god, like, yeah, can you imagine?
That's so crazy, like how these undercover agents like get in with these like drug dealers and just big organized crime. And they have to like really play the part. Like they have to like go along with, like, I think FBI people have to like, you know, smoke crack. Fun job.
Do you think you would be a good undercover agent?
Yeah.
I do too. You don't scream feds to me.
No, I don't think I would scream feds. I think the hard part for me would be being a narc.
Right. That's a pretty important part of being undercover agent.
I mean, depending on what the case is, you know what I'm saying? If it was for this, I'd probably be like, yeah, let's go. But I'd be a good like undercover like drug person.
I agree.
Or like undercover. Well, I think this woman was like working with the doctor.
That's right. So she had gotten far enough in the process with Rosenbaum to where she had her blood tested. And yeah, the doctors are, you know, kind of, they have plausible deniability in how involved they are in this, because like the other job of Rosenbaum besides doing the connecting and brokering is to fabricate the lie and get it all coordinated between both the donor and the seller to where they have the same story, because anybody that goes to donate an organ, like a kidney, while they're still living is interviewed and asked questions, you know, if they say that they were being compensated or if the interview, you know, doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, they'll cancel the operation because that otherwise they'd be breaking the law. But the people like, you know, whether you're the undercover agent or the actual person that's donating an organ, you know, are trained by the broker to lie and work the system, which does kind of let the doctors off the hook, basically. So that's sort of another thing I was saying, was like Rosenbaum went down, but there were a lot of other people that were potentially involved in profiting from the whole operation that are able to wipe their hands of it and pretend that they didn't know a thing.
Pontius Pilate that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that I have a good sense of, because I do think that the doctors basically, they're not like, if I don't think that's their job to necessarily be like investigative on that level. Like you ask questions and sometimes people lie, but like you're not really supposed to be
too inquisitive
or too like suspicious that you're being lied to, and unless it's blatant.
Yeah, like trust your patient.
Yeah, at the end of the day, there is a nice feeling that comes with saving somebody's life by getting them an organ that they need from a willing like a willing donor. Maybe Selena Gomez did break the law and like undercover slide her friend. It's a law that is easy to break.
Well, if I had an organ donor and I was Selena Gomez, I would treat them very well.
Right. And right, exactly. And that can, that could potentially be, but I don't think that like they crack down also that hard on that kind of crime.
As someone who's willing to pay $150,000 for an organ, you should, okay, now I sound like the moral police, but I'm like, you should fucking, you have that money, you should like find out who gave you the fucking organ and
tip them.
Give them a nice tip, buy them a nice dinner.
I mean, yeah, at that point they already are breaking the law if they paid the $150,000. So it wouldn't it wouldn't be like any more illegal to take them to Olive Garden or whatever. My idea of a nice dinner.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that that is the best like summary I have right now of this whole Rosenbaum case. I mean, he's out of prison now. I guess the other thing is they had to talk about whether or not to deport him because
it, was only sentenced for like 5 years. Or so. Yeah,
I read 2.5.
Well, maybe that's what he served.
Maybe whether or not to deport him hinges on other things like what kind of crime it was, and they determined that ultimately there was like some altruism in the nature of his crime. It was not for, obviously it was for, you know, desire to make money, and you know
there was some quote-unquote morality to it.
Yeah,
well, I mean, that's kind of what I thought when I read the article, because I was under the impression that organ trafficking is like, you know, you steal someone and throw them in a van and then kill them for their organs.
Yeah.
Like, totally. I didn't realize that it was like a consensual transaction despite the other person being fucked over.
Yeah. I mean, I've been so intensely researching this the past couple of days. I know exactly like what you mean, because I was confused and realized there are a lot of different layers or levels, I should say, trafficking. That
exactly. I'm like, when you hear the word trafficking, it's like sex trafficking. Like those people are all like abducted or coerced into it or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, abducted. Whereas this is like a communication. These people give blood samples,
right,
to make sure that they match. It's not like, oh, we'll just throw some kidney in you, you know?
For sure.
Like, there's a method to this fucked up madness.
There's a whole group of people that are proponents for legalizing this kind of thing, where it's called the Alliance for Organ Donor Incentives.
Let's join.
They are interested in making it where people can be compensated. Because the fact is, 10% of the people on the wait list die every year waiting.
I mean, I like, Lord knows I could use both my kidneys, but if I was in a situation where I could give a kidney and could use the money, I would, you know, do that. It's kind of like, no, I mean, I don't know, whatever. I'm not making them the same people, but like surrogacy and that shit.
I made that connection too, because people, you know,
you're using your body for someone else's benefit.
Yeah. And like,
not sexually.
And in the worst cases, sort of discarded afterwards with the trauma of surgery and childbirth in those circumstances.
You'll probably get some PKs, so.
The other thing you made me think of, okay, you were saying you need both of your kidneys.
Yeah, like, I don't think I could give away one, and then if I had only one, I don't know if that would, like, go well.
You're not a one-kidney kind of girl.
No. I'm like, I didn't drink 3 days this week. And I'm like, yeah.
I read a Reddit comment, which, you know, like far from real proof.
But at the same time, Reddit's so much more real than like Google.
Yeah. I mean, it can definitely be very informative. And I appreciate it for a lot of things I've learned from it. But this guy was saying his uncle would get kidney transplants simply for the ability to continue partying and would do it like semi-regularly so that he could like improve his hangovers and keep partying.
I'm good, guys. I just got a new kidney. Let's right. go fucking rage.
And then like 5 years later, I would just do it again.
The fuck? That's insane.
I think, and he said he was in Mexico. So if there were enough desperate people.
Well, his brain is probably going to hide, so.
I'm like, can you imagine the scar too?
Well, imagine going through like multiple kidneys.
Yeah. I don't know. The spiritual ramifications of just taking kidneys from, you know, vulnerable strangers and every like 5 years would be pretty, I don't know. It'd be pretty disturbing. I wouldn't want to have those nightmares.
Just drink less or stop drinking or do it a noble way.
And I think a question I would like to answer in the course of this episode, or at least think about, is if there is a way to incentivize organ donation without creating a system where vulnerable people get like screwed over. So I mean, obviously, and like,
it can't be as liberal as like giving plasma.
That's just something I tried to do recently.
Did he tell you no?
Well, I just left because I was impatient and like wanted to meet Connor for oysters for happy. And I was going to miss the happy hour if I stayed there any longer.
I would do the same thing.
It was taking forever and I didn't really eat. So I was like, this is probably a bad idea.
I like wouldn't meet the like standards that they need for the plasma, like on my.
Oh, right. I would have to lie too as, you know, like a gay guy.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you can't be like, I haven't had sex or like in the sex or in like the past 6 months. And like, you need to be a certain BMI and I'm not there.
Yeah, I didn't get to the point where I would have had to answer those questions. But I don't know. If I can do it, I would just for the money. Like, I wouldn't do it out of the goodness of my heart.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not giving plasma out of the goodness of my heart. I'm giving it because I'm desperate for money. I mean, I've given blood before, so yeah. Like maybe like,
I don't know if I have or not. I can't remember.
Yeah, you just kind of like hang out in a chair for like 30 minutes, I think, and
that
yeah,
helps.
And they like apple juice or something.
I used to pass out all the time in doctor's offices from needles and anything where blood was taken. I would just like lose consciousness and they would freak out. So I had to start telling them, oh yeah, I pass out sometimes. So they didn't like think that they killed me. Cause I would wake up like so confused and be pale as a sheet and they would look so worried about me. I was like, oh my bad. I meant to tell you.
God.
This happens all the time.
Yeah, like I'm with shots, like I just got jabbed the other day and basically my thing is I can't look. I'm okay with getting shots and drawing blood, but I don't like looking at it because I get freaked.
Yeah.
It's just like, too much.
The less I experience it, the better. So I do also try to not look and just think about anything else. It's kind of like, you know how some people, when they see someone vomit, it makes them vomit. For me, like, or if they smell vomit, it makes them vomit. For me, it's like if I feel a needle or see a needle going into me or even like see one on TV, I start to like lose my vision.
Yeah, right. I have to look away.
Yeah, exactly. No, that helps.
And
but
it's usually like pretty fast, you know?
It depends.
Like I look away for like 3 seconds and it's like,
there have been shots that I was supposed to go back for a second round and third round that I just couldn't because they were too intense for me. So
go and hold your hand.
Oh no, it's bad. Like when I went,
I'll give you a clone.
Maybe something like that could help. I was going to tell you about when I got my first COVID vaccine.
Ooh.
I went with Mikey and fully lost consciousness. And apparently I was like seizing a little bit. So I fell out of this chair and had like scratched my arm against the chair because I was falling out of it. And
Holy fuck. And
literally when I woke up, didn't know where I was. It took me like a second to recognize Mikey. And then I was like crying. I went to this like nightmare space that was so intense and like painful and like scary that I just woke up like crying and with a scratch on my arm from like falling out of the chair. So Mikey was there to, you know, be my support, but did not.
Okay, drama queen.
I know, literally though. It's like, it's like, I can't help it.
The vaccine, that was like the fastest shit ever. Like they literally, I was like, okay, it's done.
I cannot help it.
And I'm like, I don't like shots, but like that was like so fast. But I get it. Like people have adverse reactions to injections.
Yeah, it's not. It's like all mental for me, and I do.
Yeah, that's how it is.
I have an ability to really like tame my drama queen like nature in most situations. As just like a functioning adult.
Just not bad.
But when it comes to getting a shot, like there's nothing I've found that is fully effective. And that was just like that was just a bad day. Like I remember that year just being very, very stressful for other reasons. I had like beef with a roommate that would like carry around a knife and shit. And like it kind of like
was all piling up, and then oh god, you need to tell me more about the roommate with the knife. But it was all piling up, and then the COVID shot did it.
Uh huh. I think it really was compounding mental stressors. And
wait,
ugh.
Yeah. I was gonna say let's circle back, follow up with this organ thing because. I want to talk about how not all these people were voluntary.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. I know there were stories in Brazil in the 80s about kids getting, like you said, picked up in vans and found dead later with wounds.
No, but like the lady. Okay. So lady from Toronto, she met a guy online and traveled to like Peru to meet him and wound up being murdered with her head chopped off and then her organs donated. Yeah.
I remember you sent me that.
Like the head chopping off, like they meant to kill her.
Do you remember like right. What year it was? I'm just trying to.
It was like, I don't know, the past 10 years.
Okay.
That's like so heartbreaking. And like, sadly, like not very smart of her, but nonetheless, like
that's it hard. Is really sad. And I was not that it makes more sense, but I can follow that story more easily than I can the Puerto Rico story because when you're a woman, like traveling to this other country and then get your organs taken and you end up being murdered, like. You're not gonna keep the victim alive to go back home. Like if you're a criminal running an organization like that, where you're attacking people.
Yeah, that's the odd thing. I mean, I don't know if the criminals were caught or what, but they found out the fucking story. And I'm sure that's happened many a times or just like worse, like, you know, I don't know. Like people are brutal. Fucking pick up someone off the street and then, like I said, take them in a van, do what you need to do with them and dispose. That's like the scarier part. kind of like the sex trafficking, you know? Minus, yeah, like, it's like apples and oranges. Like, you don't want them to, you don't want them, and you don't want them to be alive to talk.
The vibe of the article also, they knew one of the people involved in Peru, but imagine that there were many, many, many other people involved. You kind of have to have a lot of people involved. It's not like stealing somebody's, like, you know, wedding ring. Or
no, this is not a one-man show, dude.
Yeah, like, you have to have a surgeon who is able to perform effectively, or like all of these transplants, and then a person who is ready to receive that already basically lined up. And like, that alone is so much administrative work. And you don't just, like, I don't know, find a surgeon everywhere. Like, I don't know how you can even do that. It's just, it's like, I can sort of fathom it, but it seems so much more organized in a way that other kinds of crime don't have to be, because it's involving like the medical industry, which, you know, it's like, you have to find credentialized people that are willing to break the law.
There's a lot of them, though, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's very...
I love that. That's like my favorite thing, is like rich, successful, or, you know, like philanthropical. There it is. People that engage in like crazy shit. I think that's like so cool.
Like Jin Shah.
It's so cool. I just want to be like that. No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think it's fast. Politicians and, you know, whatever.
I mean, I have like a fascination with the rich.
I'm not talking about politicians taking organs. I'm just talking about like...
No, I get it. You know, I mean, I have my own sort of back and forth with how I feel about like the very wealthy.
Yeah, same.
But I mean, hey, like, when I'm out around people, like if I'm at the office or at the bar, you know, I might keep it to myself how much I hate rich people. It's not a good way to make friends.
I don't know, but like, yeah, being affluent is attractive, typically.
Well, it incentivizes me to be fake, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you work in sales, so you know what I mean. Like,
oh, totally. Well, no, I will, like, I don't know. I think I'm a pretty authentic, I mean, sales, like, obviously, sure. Like, you always have to sometimes sugarcoat shit. But at the end of the day, like, I'm an ethical salesperson. For sure.
I mean, you can be fake and ethical at the same time, I think. Like, if it's a professional setting.
Being fake is, like, part of the name of the game. Like, I don't... would I be friends with everyone that I fucking interact with? No. But I'm going to be a delight, you know?
I'm so bad at sales. Like, I can imagine what you're saying. But for me, it would be a constant effort to conceal my genuine feelings.
Yeah, no, I know.
Not because I don't like the people, but because the product I'm selling them is shit and they shouldn't waste their money on it. Or, like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing, is like, I'm sometimes like, too honest for my own good. But also that at the same time, that actually can really benefit me. Because the people are like...
Well, yeah, you could establish trust.
Exactly. They're like, okay, yeah, you could have made a bunch of money off of this, but you chose to, you know, whatever.
I think my thing with rich people in those sorts of professions that are doing illegal things is oftentimes they're doing something very similar to other successful business people. It's just that other people have found better loopholes than them. And like, for example, what Jin Shah did is sort of like a similar business model to a lot of other successful companies. It's just that what she did was over the line.
I'm saying this, it's like Lucy, like fucking credit cards.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Or predatory loans.
Exactly. She just doesn't have, like, you know, JP Morgan backing her.
My official take is that many people not in prison are guilty of very similar things that are not like literally the same, like, legal status, but are like spiritually just as corrupt. And like, most successful businesses are built on like the mistreatment of somebody.
Absolutely. Like, literally.
I found myself to be quite the, like, justice warrior about this, because I've fallen in love with this specific anthropologist lady. This is an interesting case too, because she pushes the boundaries of her own field for the purpose of, you know, a greater good. It's not for profit. Mm-hmm. It's to stop. It's like, you know, kind of like superhero behavior. It's like, yeah, you're not following the official system, but you're stopping crime.
Yeah.
She had a whole website and publication about organ trafficking, and it was launched in, I think, 90 something or in 2000s. I think it was like year 2000. She launched Organ Watch. So that was after about a decade of research where she was traveling to different countries to get to the bottom of the rumors, because her first anthropological exposure
she's like a gossip reporter.
It's next level. It's beyond that. It's very, like, it is like,
no, I know it's beyond that, but I'm like,
it feels like it's just investigative. Yeah, because she was curious, not because it was her job to be
vigilante,
but because she had what she felt was like a moral imperative and a curiosity and a skill set that allowed her to get a shit ton of evidence. And her evidence was even used in the Rosenbaum case. So that's how tied in she is to this shit, as like, she's like the organ detective. She seriously was. So I guess I'll go to the beginning. She was in Brazil and heard these stories about kids being found in ditches with the scars, like they're dead, they've had their organs taken. And
that's the type of like morbid I'm talking about.
Yeah, but there's no proof of that. It's like she went to the morgues and interviewed people there and was not able to find any proof, but she didn't stop because she felt like there was still something to it. So she, I liked how this article phrased this. She subscribed to an academic school of thought that swore off imposing Western notions of absolute or objective truth. So she wrote her first like book in the early 90s and referenced just sort of more generally things about people in Brazil and just the violence of everyday life for people in certain parts of Brazil. So she eventually goes to this conference in Bellagio, Italy, to speak on...
Actually, when you sent me that, I thought you were talking about the hotel.
Wait, where's the Bellagio?
Las Vegas.
Oh, thank you. I was like, I knew that word sounded familiar.
I was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, I'm like, I'm sure shit goes down there.
Right, it honestly would. No, she was in the city in Italy for a medical conference on organ trafficking. I think the people in the audience really wanted her to say if it was true or not, but this is a quote. She said, basically, it's like true at the indeterminate level between fact and metaphor, but I don't have, but it's not like literally true. Like, I'm obsessed with her, like, talking to all of these surgeons and doctors that are obviously very by the book and literalist, and like having this like intellectual superiority to them and her ability to work with metaphors and like understand that behind the rumor there's a truth that's not exactly as it's presented. So
there's like a scientific evidence approach,
right?
But there's also a
vibes.
Vibes, like just observant, your experience that may not be like, I don't know, recorded and stuff. Like, it's like a lot of science is fucking like that. Like, this many whatever is healthy. And like, it's just, they're like, okay, in college, I remember it'd be like, how many drinks do you have per week? And I was honest with these people at first. And then I started getting like reaming out. And yeah, I'm just like, okay, so this like idea that people drinking 14 or more drinks a week are like, I don't know, like alcoholics or like heavy drinkers. I'm like, 80% of the people I know are drinking well more than that. So like, why are you surprised that I tell you I drink like 5 drinks, like 5 nights a week on average, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying in the sense that like, doctors are not,
I'm just like sounding like an alcoholic, but like it's true, like what the fuck. Like, yeah, what I'm saying is like the science doesn't always like match up with real fucking life.
Yeah, yeah, I see what you mean, like the by the book version of like a diagnosis, yeah, is not always as effective.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, think of how many times you've gone out and had 8 drinks in a night.
Can we not?
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, that's like a good example of just bullshit.
I don't know. This example is like distracting me, but I see what you're saying. I mean, I don't know. It probably is bad for you to drink. Like, I think.
No, of course it is. But I'm just saying, in reality, these people are like acting like, oh, yeah, Americans drink. Like, no, that's not the truth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, whenever they present data about whatever, uh-huh, you know, like surveys they've done, like whether or not that reflects reality is
bullshit. Everyone lies on surveys.
Yeah.
Like, half the people I grew up with do cocaine regularly.
Surveys are hard. Like, if you ever take even, like, a Myers-Briggs personality test, it depends on what day you get me. I'm going to answer truthfully, but I might have a different result every day because it depends on, like, how I feel in that moment. So, yeah, it's not very feeling like, cut and dry.
Feeling my guts or just telling them what they want to hear.
For me, it's... The questions are so, like, I have a specific experience where I was asked if a medicine was effective at improving a specific symptom. And in, you know, the days that I, like, say, was not taking the medicine, I have, you know, it's a completely different situation than a week later when I did take the medicine. There's so many things that are not held constant. It's extremely difficult for me to determine if the changes I experienced were related to the medicine or were they related to, you know, the weather, a text message I got that day, how I was doing at work, or how my relationships in my life were going. Like, you don't think that those things are going to have a bigger impact on me than like the medicine you're trying to test. But then if your question is, oh, did this medicine help with this symptom? It's like, I'm going to answer as honestly as I can, but it's not going to reflect exactly the reality of what really happened because it's impossible to isolate one of those elements and, you know, put them in a vacuum away from everything else that's affecting you all the time. That's what's so hard about those kinds of reports and those kinds of studies is that there's, you know, things are not in a vacuum, so it's easy to misread the data.
Yeah, take data with a grain of salt.
So on the subject of like scientists, she caused a huge rift in the anthropologist community, because she was kind of changing the entire methodology that anthropologists before her used when they were studying cultures around the world. They would kind of be more focused on the literal, how many drinks did they have a day, or like what was their daily life like, and not looking at like the other structures that create those habits. So like they'll try and kind of make it where they can really easily compare this culture to this culture and see which one, you know, drinks more alcohol or whatever. And like it's
just a good example.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure, that's probably not the main thing that they would document, but drug use is a big part of most all cultures in history in one form or another. Mm-hmm. And so like basically once she hears a story about kids like showing up dead in a ditch, she's not going to go to be like, oh, well, I would love to follow that up, but first I need to figure out like if you put your toilet paper like which way you make it face. Like she's going to say, I'd actually like to know more about the dead kids in the ditch, and can we focus on that and let me follow that, you know what I mean, like path.
Yeah. Fuck, that's like, oh god, how it should be,
right? So there was this huge, yeah, like she had a whole debate with this man, and this was in 1995.
I don't know, what would you call that, like kind of like she's going against, I mean, yeah, she's going against the grain, but like formalities or something, like, because fuck that.
This is a quote from her. She wrote, when one researches organized, structured, and largely invisible violence, there are times where you must ask if it is more important to strictly follow a professional code or to intervene.
Yeah.
And a lot of anthropologists were very like,
follow the book.
They've disapproved of her methods that were more interventionist, and thought that it made her work less scientific and more journalistic, which is maybe a fair point, because if you're...
Anthropology is one of those things, though, that's kind of like...
Right. It is what you make it.
It's not like chemistry, you know?
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't have to be the way it was in the 50s and 60s to still be...
It's like the science of like human life or like behavior.
And like culture, like, and I just have a feeling that the original motherfuckers that were kind of creating the professional codes of anthropology in like, I don't know, the early 20th century were a little slanted in the direction of being like biased for the people that were in power already. Like, I think a big thing that she was doing was questioning the power structures, and I other people before her, maybe not intentionally, but in effect, were not acknowledging the power structures and just focusing on the like literal behavior. So anyway, I thought that was pretty interesting, like, because it was basically due to her methodology of researching the organ trafficking thing.
Yeah, no, I love a bitch that goes like,
I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, break the rules, come on.
I should have said her name forever ago. It's Nancy Shepper Hughes. It's like a hyphenated last name.
Look her up.
I'll just call her Nancy.
Nancy Shepper Hughes.
She's so iconic to me. I find her incredibly interesting and brave and defiant, and I love that so much. Ugh, it's making me feel like a leftist again. Anyway, she like in Italy was able to chat up a bunch of doctors and was able to kind of get stories from them about shit that had gone down. Like one guy in South America was saying that he has been involved or aware of, I think he said 30,000 pituitary glands being sent out of the country. They were pituitary glands from dead bodies that did not necessarily consent. Like, it wasn't like they were murdered for them. But yeah, I know. Isn't that gross? I'm like, ugh. Like, is that like what makes you sweat?
I mean, when I'm dead, do what you want with me, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can go on record and say that, but I don't think these people said it. And that's why it was like unethical.
When I'm dead, just play some sick music at my funeral.
Another person was like chatting with her, and it was like this Israeli guy saying that Palestinian laborers were specifically eager and generous when it came to this, which is kind of code for the most vulnerable and desperate to take the lowest amount of money. It was very much like looked at as a place where you a place where if you're trying to find a cheap organ, you're able to acquire that at a really low cost.
That's the spot.
After her Italy trip, she like maximizes her joint slay with a few other anthropologists that heard about what she's doing. It was this married couple that went to China, and then she took on South Africa and Brazil, and then another colleague went to India, and they were all doing research about the same thing in different places and figuring out what the bigger story was. Then she starts publishing some of the stuff she finds after years and years. So I think they have did a few years of research like that, traveling the different parts of the world, and then met up and were, you know, sharing their findings.
What a life.
I know. Literally, the article I read had so much detail. It was like they were at a Starbucks in Tokyo in 1999 sharing their findings about organ trafficking in four or five different countries.
Yeah.
And then after she like went live on her Organ Watch like website and shit, she started getting a ton of emails from people telling her what tips they had or what claims they could make or what experiences they had. So she started then just even like separate of her other colleagues and separate from the grant that she received from Berkeley, which is where she was a professor ever since like the 80s. But she was doing a lot of independent travel based on the tips that she got in her email address to go interview people. Like, she will be in, you know, like South America interviewing somebody at a morgue, or in Africa interviewing somebody at a hospital, and then collecting all of this information in files, and eventually was tipped off about, and this is how I knew all that extra information about Rosenbaum. It's because she got tipped off about Rosenbaum in the late 90s and reported it to the FBI in 2002. But the FBI didn't pursue it until like 6 years later.
That's so interesting. And the fact that they went undercover for like 3 or 4 years, I don't know.
It is truly so impressive that she's been able to gather so much evidence by herself, because the official people involved in doing the investigation were not interested or willing to go to these lengths. So she just did it by herself.
Yeah, well, they didn't have the right intentions, or... Yeah, like she was looking to find the truth.
It's like whenever they did finally go after Rosenbaum, it wasn't because they were interested in stopping organ trafficking. It was a part of a huge sting operation that involved like at least 40 other criminals that had nothing to do with organ trafficking. And like, I think some rabbis were involved too. So I think it just worked out that he was involved with enough other criminals that he came down in this one sting operation. But honestly, like, if it had not been for the bigger picture of other crime happening in New Jersey, he may have never been pursued by the FBI at all. But I mean, I guess I get that he's not enemy number one. Like, he's not a murderer. He's just facilitating.
No, I don't think he is a murderer.
So this lady, I'm trying to remember what else I got on her. Oh yeah, there was a mention. She went to Turkey and was in a poor neighborhood in Istanbul and pretended to be a woman looking for an organ. And she went as far as to sit down with a unemployed baker, is what it said, and negotiating a price.
Oh, so she like got in their shoes.
Yeah, she went in their shoes to put the big picture together. Like
the picture that you sent me of her just makes her even cooler.
Yeah, I like her haircut. I like her vibe. She's like
an older middle-aged mom. She's a down-ass bitch.
And I think her disappointment with the decision that happened in this specific case with Rosenbaum is that the surgeons were not pursued because she believes that they, on some level, were aware and knew and were not, like, yeah, maybe they were performing life-saving surgeries, but they were not taking proper aftercare of donors that would be sent back to their home country without any support.
Yeah, I'm sure these people had zero, like, post-op care.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Like, maybe luckily they would have been, like, stitched up and given painkillers. That's about it. Is what I would guess. That's what I would guess. Like, clearly it's all unethical, so I wouldn't see that part being ethical either. But that's my conspiratorial. Like, they don't care. They're not going to make sure you're okay. Maybe, like, to the smallest degree. But, like, yeah, I didn't know until this week that organ trafficking was, like, a real thing. So maybe I'm in the dark, but there you have it, people.
The last thing I want to say is,
yes,
there was a big fight between Israel and Sweden, like, 15 years ago.
Ooh.
Because a Swedish journalist wrote a piece about Israel using Palestinian bodies for, you know, like, for their organs in unethical ways. And so Israel was coming at them, like, telling them that they were anti-Semitic and saying that they were playing on a stereotype from medieval times where people claimed that Jews were using the blood of Christians to make their, like, matzah or something for Passover, which, it's like, girl, I would not even know about these stereotypes if you didn't tell me about them. I've never heard of that. I have heard of, like, the blood thirst thing from when I did research on, what is it?
This isn't it, but adrenochrome, but it's not it.
That is what I'm thinking of.
That's
exactly, I'm not talking about the actual, like, vampire facials.
Isn't that, like, the blood or DNA of, like, kids?
Yeah, that adrenochrome theory is, yeah, like, I guess that Planned Parenthood is selling the stem cells of aborted fetuses to other doctors.
Well, if Hillary Clinton's like using adrenochrome, it's not working.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I don't buy it.
I'm not saying she's not, like, she looks fine for her age, but I'm not like, wow.
Right. I mean, I don't really.
You look like Jane Fonda.
Well, okay. If anything, Hillary Clinton would be, like, profiting from the exchange of fetus stem cells to other elites. I don't think she would be using them on herself. I think she's more interested in money than vanity.
Yeah, I don't think she's ever been very interested in vanity.
She served some good looks in her time, but
objectively.
And if you're going to be involved in that kind of, it's like, you know, don't get high on your own supply.
I don't know. She's always looked like kind of a dork. I saw this funny video and it was like some college where Hillary was speaking and it was somebody screaming like free, but like totally interrupting her speech and like just not stopping for like a minute and a half straight. And she just like sat there. I don't know. It was really funny and awkward. Yeah.
I've seen a couple similar videos. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it just happened. Oh my God. I just showed an apartment yesterday and it was the former hospital where John Wayne Gacy and Hillary Clinton were both born.
Whoa. The what do you mean? Like how?
Like the building. Like they like basically made it a shell and then rebuilt it. Yeah.
Oh, that's
but it was a former hospital.
So, okay, Israel versus Sweden is mounting still, and this story is only like halfway done. So, like, basically, Israel was saying that Sweden should renounce this journalist because his article was supposedly anti-Semitic. And I mean, Sweden was like, we have a free press, so we're not going to do that.
Okay.
And then Miss Nancy was able to come to the defense of the journalist, put Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, in his place because it was at the level where he was getting involved in criticizing the journalist. But Sweden backed up their man, and then Nancy came in with a recording of an official in Israel admitting to exactly what the journalist accused him of, that she had procured from interviewing him. And so it was like, imagine being like, oh, these two countries are beefing with each other because like somebody wrote an article and the other country is claiming that it's offensive because it's lying or something, and you have recorded proof that it actually is true. It's like doing the journalist's job 10 times better and just kind of hopping in like, oh, I literally have the recording if you want it. And
yeah,
it's like,
hold on, you don't need to do any work, I've got it right here.
Yeah. So like the way she's able to get this information out of people is you're going back and forth from being extremely empathetic and like, you know, nodding and like fully understanding where they're coming from.
She disarmed them. She's an underrated queen.
Nancy Shepherd Hughes.
And that's that.